The Bible and Modern Science with your host, Dr. Joseph Henson of the Science Faculty of Bob Jones University. Here is Dr. Henson.
Thank you. Several weeks ago, we started out a new section of material, and I chose at that time to refer to it simply as gaps. One of the many difficult problems for the evolutionist are simply gaps between certain things. We started out by mentioning the fact that there is a gap between nothing and something. And for these past several weeks, we have been discussing what passes for science's views about that difficulty. We have seen that in most cases it is a matter of scientism rather than science, but at least we have seen what modern scientists have come up with in an effort to get over the problem of how the things that we see in nature when we look around got here. And I'm not thinking now about the idea of organisms exactly. But where did the stuff of our universe come from? And we've talked about the different views of cosmology and spent a fair amount of time on the idea of Big Bang. It seems to me the next gap in this series has to do with, well, there is one that I'm not intending to spend a lot of time on, but it has to do with the idea, what about the gap between energy and matter? I'm aware that the current scientific view of atomic structure, which is called the quantum view, is simply a view that matter is a convenient storage form for energy. And yet, apparently, there are some collections of energy or matter, depending on your viewpoint, which are very different from the various forms of energy that we view. I'm thinking about light, heat, electricity, etc. In matter, we have things, entities, that are part of that material makeup, protons, electrons, neutrons, etc. The last time I bothered to look, I think there were something over 40 subatomic particles that had been theorized. But there are, if those things are simply matter, and there is some evidence to suggest that they are not, they're more than that. But if they are just that, then they are arranged in a form very different from the usual types of matter that we have in mind. So to my mind, at least, there is a difficulty between the energy and the actual matter itself. There was a rather interesting comment that I ran across in an article that was written by a man by the name of McCrae, W.H. McCrae. In 1968, he wrote an article that was entitled Cosmology After Half a Century. Now, that time means that it was after the Urey Miller experiments. And of necessity, we will have to talk about those a little bit, although we have talked about them before. And he was simply, from an evolutionary standpoint, trying to come up with a summary of what was known about cosmology at that time. And he included in the article some statements that were rather interesting regarding the material. I'm using that word in a general sense. I'm not trying to cause an argument here. The stuff that makes up matter itself. The article, quote from the article begins here. In 1873, James Clerk Maxwell wrote, "In the heavens, we discover by their light stars so distant that no material thing can ever have passed from one to another. And yet this light tells us that each of them is built up of molecules of the same kinds we have here on the earth." Now that observation is interesting. If evolution is true, then why is the matter out in suns and stars in the universe the same as it is in our own sun? It would seem that you would have very different kinds of matter, different elements, different lots of things. And yet the evidence that we have indicates that is not the case. And it would seem to me to indicate that, to my mind, the simple answer to this is simply that they were all created by the same Creator, and He simply chose to form the same kind of elements there as here. That is not a comment, I'm sure, that is welcomed by evolutionists, but it seems a reasonable conclusion to me. Continuing the quote, "No theory of evolution can be formed to account for the similarity of molecules." And I think he's right. On the other hand, the exact equality of each molecule to all the others of the same kind gives it the essential character of its being eternal and self-existent. I would not come to that conclusion, but in light of his opinions and his views, it would be plausible to him. My mind can be accounted for just as easily by a special creation that occurred at some point in the past, and God simply used a common material to do his creating with. Again, going back to the article, quote, "So far as we know, the result is still the same as Maxwell inferred. All electrons are everywhere the same. All protons are the same," and so on. "We should expect a sufficiently sophisticated theory to tell us why this is so." Well, I think there is some information that tells us that. I think we have in the Scripture a revelation that is perfectly reasonable, indicating that God simply chose to create that way. Now, there is a, without dwelling unduly on this idea, that is the problem of how energy gets changed into atoms, you're faced then with another gap, namely between atoms and molecules. Without our discussing, taking a great deal of time here to discuss the difficulty of how the atoms came, I want to make a couple more comments about it. They are different from molecules. Now, any of you that have been to school in recent years will have come away from that with some kind of a picture of atoms in your mind. I would expect for most of you, if I were able to talk to you and you were to describe for me the atoms, your view, your notion of what atoms are, we would come up with some view of little tiny billiard ball particles whirling around one another in space. And if you are more knowledgeable about that, the little billiard balls would get changed into the protons, electrons, and neutrons, which some of which, electrons in particular, may not necessarily be viewed as matter. And this is the view that is generally held by scientists today, that matter is simply that convenient storage form for energy. But the fact remains, there are some major differences between atoms and molecules. Now, molecules, of course, are made up of atoms. But the difference is that they are attracted to one another and held in their relative position by chemical bonds. And these chemical bonds apparently are simply energy. It is this energy that man makes use of in most all of his processes. This is basically what's going on when you eat. You are eating foods, and those foods are going to go through a digestive process in your body, which will result in the translation of the bond energy of the molecules of food you're eating into bond energy in ATP, the adenosine triphosphate of your body, so that when you need energy for muscle contraction or nerve stimulus or mitosis or whatever, that immediately available energy is there in the form of bond energy in adenosine triphosphate. Now, the food that you eat, carbohydrates, lipids, proteins, is simply broken down. The bond energy is translated into bond energy in the compound I have mentioned, plus much of it is lost as heat. It has intrigued me to know that the efficiency with which the cells in your body are capable of breaking down food material and retaining that energy in a usable form is very high. the mechanical energy for most internal combustion engines not very high. I would guess probably most cars, if you have a car that is 10% efficient, that is that 10% of the energy and the fuel in the car actually gets changed into mechanical motion, that is moving the automobile down the highway, you probably have a prize you need to hang on to. And yet that same efficiency with regard to cellular activity is at or above 50%. So the cells have the capability of translating that energy in a much more efficient manner. Now, how did that division between atoms and molecules begin to be overcome? You can pick up Oprin's book on the origin of life or Keyosian's book by the same title, and you can read therein and have a discussion about how certain atoms, carbon, hydrogen, oxygen, nitrogen, are translated into the first simple molecules, water, methane, ammonia, carbon dioxide, etc. Now, once that has started, then the race is on. Those simple molecules then simply are formed into more and more complicated structures. But there is a problem in my mind if you're trying to explain all of this by evolution about how that possibly could have happened. Now, in Huxley's definition of evolution, which we looked at a long time ago, he is giving the criteria for evolution, indicating that basically it is simply a matter of going from simple to complex and an increasing variation, increasing complexity, and increasing variation, variety of things, a new elements coming into existence, new molecules, new organisms, etc. And, of course, the simplest of the atoms then, if you were following his theory, would have to be hydrogen. Hydrogen would seem to be the atom which was the basis of the evolution of all the other atoms, that hydrogen somehow would bumble around and change itself into helium, and helium into the lithium and beryllium and so on up through the periodic chart. But to my mind, there is a difficulty in trying to ascribe that kind of thing simply to evolution. Now, we'll talk a little bit about some of the problems of this usually used view of how the cells came, the atoms came into existence. But I think there is a difficulty if you're going to simply attempt to explain this purely and simply on the basis of evolutionary processes.
Thank you, Dr. Henson. You may send email to Dr. Henson at jhenson@bju.edu. That's jhenson at bju.edu. Or write to Dr. Joseph L. Henson, Box 34621, Bob Jones University, Greenville, South Carolina, zip code 29614, in the United States of America. You're invited to listen next time for The Bible and Modern Science.